Hello, my name is Brenda Hold. I am the Associate State Director of Community Outreach for the Arizona State Office of AARP. And while February is officially Black History Month, AARP began the celebration with the observance of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday on January 15th and continues the celebration through February 28th. AARP strives to develop a year-round appreciation of Black history, life, and culture by spotlighting some of the great innovations and contributions African Americans have made, such as what you'll see today. We are glad you could join us in order to keep the celebration and acknowledgments moving forward, and we would also like to thank Boom Goddess Radio for the opportunity to collaborate. We hope you enjoyed today's program. Be safe and be well.
Hello and welcome to Boom Goddess Radio. I am your host, Jennifer Davis Page. And today I have the privilege of presenting the third of a six-part series for Black History Month. Today, we will tell the story of Quincy Bell Douglas. The history will be told by her son-in-law, Richard Davis. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you.
The show is yours. So just tell us about Quincy Bell Douglas. I've got some questions, but when we talked the other day, I know you have lots of information, so I don't want to interrupt the flow of the story. Okay. So just please begin.
Well, for me, the story of Quincy Douglas starts in August of 1963. And I say that because that's when I first met her. She was living at 1502 East 25th Street in the South Park area. I remember going to meet her primarily because I was introduced to her daughter, and I met Quincy at that time. And I can tell you that a story of Quincy Douglas is essentially a story of South Park neighborhood. And you can't get really into that without at least talking a little bit about the neighborhood per se. Because back in about 1963, I can tell you that the South Park neighborhood was vibrant and at the same time underdeveloped. And I say that because one of the beauties of going in the South Park neighborhood back at that time is that you walk down the street and you were introduced to people like, Margaret Campbell. Now, a lot of people never heard of Margaret Campbell, but, she was the first Black artist recognized in the state of Arizona. But more importantly, she built her house on the ground. She lived underground. And if you walk down the street and you run into her, she'd tell you all about it. She'd tell you how she built a house, why she built it. But it was one of those things where it was just a joy to figure out with people like that. And then if you walk down the street a little bit more, you run into people like Sergeant Baker. Sergeant Baker was a Buffalo soldier. And on Memorial Day and the 4th of July, he was proud of the fact that he could walk down the street and still get in his uniform. And I mean, he strutted like a soldier that he was. And I mean, that's why I say it was vibrant. I mean, you see this all the time. And then there was Mrs. Johnson, who had a restaurant. You get the best soul food in the city of Tucson. But that was what it was like back in 1963. But it was also underdeveloped. The streets were not paved. There were no sidewalks. There were no street lights. There was no park. There was nothing of that nature. And people were tired of it. And they decided that they were going to do something about it because they figured that this is their neighborhood. This is where they lived. And they were entitled to all of the benefits that every other neighborhood was entitled to. And they needed somebody to champion their cause. And lo and behold, there came Quincy Douglas. She was not a loud person. She was not a lot of different things, but she was one person that when she walked in the room, you were going to listen to what she had to say. Straight talk, that was what she was all about. And what she did was she started going to mayor and council meetings, and she would start pleading the case for the South Park neighborhood. And lo and behold, back in the 60s and 70s, they started getting some of the things that they were entitled to. The roads were being paved, the street lights were put in place, they have a park, the Marisol Park. But all of that was because of Quincy Douglas and what she did. And the neighborhood appreciated that fact. And she was a person who, she didn't have a college education, didn't have a lot of different things, but she knew what she was doing. And she was a very strong-willed person. And like I said, when she had something to say, you're going to listen whether you agree with her or not. And she got the message across, and the mayor and the council and other people knew who she was, and she was there. And like I said, she made it very clear what was going to happen. But her signature program, and I have to tell you this story because, it's one of those things where I'm not sure anybody else can do it, because the important thing about this, and the reason I don't make notes and all this and any other, I'm telling you like it was, because we lived the history. Excellent. And I was there, and she put me to work like she put everybody else to work. And that's how I know things went on. But that's the kind of person she was. And I can tell you that she had a stroke back in 63 or 64. And she was a very strong, independent person that liked to do things her own. She didn't drive, but she would walk where she wanted to go, get a ride or do whatever. But she got everywhere she needed to go and wanted to go. But when she had a stroke, it compromised her ability to walk. But I will tell you this, even though she walked with a limp, she was going to get there. She was not going to let him stop her. And she had some issue with her eyesight, and one of her eyes. But in addition to that, she was fine, and you would never know it, because she would never let you think she was handicapped in any way. But one day, you know, obviously, since she didn't get around as much as she wanted to, and she's thinking mostly about her neighbors, she said to me, she said, you know, there ought to be a way that poor people can get around in the city of Tucson. And we simply can't do it. And she said, I'm going to do something about it. So one day, and I'm at the University of Arizona as an undergraduate at the time. And like I said, I'd never done a lot of different things. But when Quincy said, you know, you're going to do something, you did it. And she said, I want to have a corporation. So I went to the library, did some research, and I said, OK, well, I can incorporate you, but we need a name. And she said, that's easy. We'll call it LIFTS, LIFTS, and it's a low income free transportation service. And she said, before I put my idea out there, I want to let people know I'm serious about it. So I incorporated her. She's head of board. She's, of course, the chairman of the board. I'm on the board because she tells me I'm going to be on the board. There was Mr. Lujan, and there was a third person. And quite frankly, my wife and I we kind of trying to remember who that was, but there was a third person on the board. But anyway, after she got the corporation set, we filed the documents and did everything we had to do, she said, I'm not ready to go and go public yet, because I want to let them know that there are other things and I'm serious about this. So one day she's watching television, and she sees a gentleman who just come from Oklahoma with part of Holmes Tuller Ford, you know, that dealership. His name was Jim Click. I'll just give you his name. And she said, I'm going to go see that man. Now, it's kind of interesting because O'Reilly Chevrolet was located at Park and 22nd Street at the time, which is very close to her house. But she didn't go to O'Reilly. She wanted to go out to Holmes Tuller, which is out of Wilmot and 22nd Street. And so she got a ride out to Holmes Tuller Ford at Wilmot and 22nd Street. And she's gone for about 3 hours. And lo and behold, they come back. She's got a 7-passenger van with the title to LIFTS. I don't know how she did it. And I swear, it was one of those things where, you know, they drive her up and drop off a brand new 7-passenger van. And now she has her first vehicle. And now she's incorporated. She's got her first vehicle. She said, now's the time to spring. So she goes down to the Marion Council and talk to the community development organization and so forth. And she got grants and grants and grants. And before you knew it, she had 5 vans. And she managed to go to Model Cities. Crestland is part of that. And you got drivers, she got mechanics, she got everybody. And before you know it, she has a full-blown transportation service in place. Now, the headquarters is actually in her living room. That's where the dispatcher worked. I mean, that's the, and lo and behold, I don't know where she learned how to do all this stuff. I'm not sure she did. She did it on the fly, but she did a heck of a job. Because the bottom line is, before you know it, she has this transportation service working, and it works beautifully. Now, there's another story that's happening here. You can tell I'm on the fly here, but I, like I said, I lived it, and you're just giving me a chance to talk about what was going on.
That's fine.
Yeah. The Keno Parkway, you know where that's located now?
Yes.
The city condemned a lot of the property in the South Park area to build the Keno Parkway, and her house was one of those houses that was taken. Well, she didn't want to leave the South Park neighborhood, so she moved into another location in the South Park neighborhood, and that's 1913 South Fremont. Now, Fremont was a street that went straight through from 29th Street all the way down to 36th Street. But once she got all these vans and she's operating like a transportation outfit, she needed a place to park these vans. So she goes down to the city, and she convinces the city to condemn Fremont in front of her house, the street, and actually deed it to her. And not only did they deed it to her, but they actually built a chain link fence around the property that was once Fremont so she could park the vans in it.
remarkable.
This is unbelievable, but that's a true story, and I'm not exaggerating. If anything, I'm underplaying it. But the bottom line is that she ran that organization, and I will tell you, it was a pride of the city of Tucson because the drivers were never late. There was never a problem with the operation of the vehicles, never a problem with whatever. And I will tell you that it was an envy of the neighborhood because other people in Sugar Hill and all the other places realized, what the heck are you guys doing down there to get your own transportation service? Well, obviously, because it was a lot of the money came from the city, that we had to do it citywide. And so the problem was, it actually operated all over the city, and it operated, like I said, flawlessly for a period of time. And eventually, like I said, she got a director. She got a lot of people to come in and help, but she put that that outfit together. And what happened in essence was that, it was so successful. The city eventually took it over because it started to cost more money to operate it than to do whatever. And it's now Vantrain. I mean, that's the way that occurred. And so what happened in essence was that Quincy became, had some real health issues in about 1983, and she moved to California because she had a daughter who lives in California because my wife is here. She also had a sister in California, and she died in California. But when they decided to build the Quincy Douglas Center, they decided they had to come with a name. They actually polled the neighborhood, and the neighborhood said, you got to name it Quincy Douglas.
There was no other name to be selected.
Well, I don't know that, and I can't say that for sure. My guess is that there were, because I mean, there were some dynamic people that lived back in those times, and I can give you some names. There's some good people, and it was a vibrant neighborhood. I mean, I enjoyed going down there. As a matter of fact, one of my pride and days were to go down on Sundays when the Masons, step out in their tuxes, and the ladies, the heroines of Jericho, and the white dresses, and all the sashes, and all, and it was there. But there were other people, and I have to believe that there were other people who were considered, but there was no question that Quincy Douglas, got the most votes, and that's what happened. And so on September 24, 2005, they dedicated it, and Doreen, my wife, was there, and Diane, the daughter from California, and I, of course, were there, and we dedicated and that's the way it's been ever since. But that's the quick and down and dirty story of Quincy Douglas and why they named that center after her. I mean, that's the story. And I mean, I can embellish it. I can do a lot of different things. I'm sure you have some questions, but she created a transportation service in the city of Tucson for poor people called the Low Income Free Transportation Services. And she had no experience doing it, but she put it together. And like I said, it ran flawlessly. I can tell you, I learned to prepare articles of incorporation. I learned to do a lot of different things, but I did it primarily because I didn't know what I was doing, but she told me I did, and therefore I did it.
Did she recruit you to be one of the drivers when she got her vans?
No, she was too smart to do that. and besides, and you have to stop and think about this. I'm in school, number one. Number okay. two, part of what she wanted is she wanted to put people to work.
Right, okay.
We have a driver, he's supporting the family. I don't need that, and that's kind of what she was all about.
So she had enough funding so she got all of the vans were free?
Not all of them were free. She got a grant, and a pretty substantial grant. They were able to, and what it boiled down to now, and I'll be honest with you, because some of the things that she did, I don't have a clue how she did it, because it's not one of those things where I went with her all the time. For example, I didn't go down to Holmes Tuttle or talk to Jim Click or anybody like that, but I know she came back with a van with a title to it. I didn't do a lot of different things, but I can tell you it worked out. So I can also tell you that when she went down to make presentations, grants were made and money was there. And by the way, she had accounting and other people working with her, and there was never any question about how the money was spent. But like I said, at some point in time, we had five vans that ran full time. And when they were not in operation, they were parked in her yard. We had mechanics that kept them running. We had drivers for every car. We had a dispatcher and all those people, they were paid. So there was enough money that was generated through grants and other things that made it work. And it was free because that's what it was. Low income, free transportation service. Oh,
what a wonderful story. We're going to take a brief break. And when we return, Richard Davis will tell us more about lifts and the Quincy Douglas story.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box? Is this tree good for climbing? How are babies made? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Talking to them about gun safety in your home is a good first step, but you can do more. Always keep your guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by N Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
We are here in the studio today talking to Richard Davis, the son-in-law of Quincy Douglas, who was an amazing woman here in Tucson, Arizona, and we're going to finish telling the rest of her story. Richard, thank you so much for being here with us today. I would like to ask you, how long did the LIFS program last? I mean, you said it started, what, in 1963?
No, it did not start. See, that's when I met Quincy for the first time.
Okay, when did she start?
The program really ran around the late 60s, early 70s. It ran approximately 7 years.
Okay.
And like I said, the city took it over after that period of time. You know, there were a lot of things going on in the city, and you were asking questions about where the funding came from and so forth. Here's what I can tell you. I was a student. Quincy was retired. She was living primarily on Social Security. And so, the money for all this did not come from us. And most of the money, and I should say literally all the money, came from donations or contributions or financial support from the city of Tucson. I do remember that, like I said before, you know, this is the kind of person she was, and this will give you a pretty good idea of the way she thought. And I would tell you that, it was really a joy watching her work and so forth, because what she said is this, here's what I want. I want a low income free transportation service, and I want it to be free. But in order to do this, I wanted to be right now, I wanted to be first class. And I'm not going to step out and let people think I don't know what I'm doing. And so I'm going to do the initial groundwork. That's why I'm going to incorporate. I'm going to do that before I talk to anybody. I'm going to get the first van on my own because I want to let them know that I'm serious. See, that's the way she thought. And like I said, once she said, I'm incorporated, here's the purpose I wanted, what I want to do. I've gotten the first van. Here's my vision and so forth. Then she said, now I'm going to go down and talk to the mayor and council, these other people, and get them to fund me. And I do know there was an organization called the Tucson Council on Economic Opportunity. That was the name of one of the groups that she made a proposal to, and she got a grant. Now, I can't tell you how much it was, but it was pretty substantial. I can tell you that about that time, the Model Cities program was kicking off in full force, and actually the director of that was a fellow I'm sure you heard of, and that's Cress Lander.
Yes.
And Cress was a good friend. So what I'm telling you is this, between the Council on Economic Opportunity and the Model Cities program and other programs out there, in addition to being whatever she was also a heck of a grant writer because she got money. And I can tell you, we didn't carry a mortgage or a payment on those vans. They were all paid for. I can't tell you how much money it was because I wasn't a bookkeeper and I didn't count it. All I know is this, the vans came and they were used and they were run. And like I said, at 1913 South Fremont was just like, a Grand Central Station, because people would call to make reservations. They wanted to go see a doctor, or they had this kind of appointment or that kind of appointment. They would call, they would reserve a ride, and it would be assigned to them, and those drivers were there, and it worked like clockwork. And I can tell you, the beauty of all this, and I think it's part neighborhood, is that I don't ever recall anybody complaining about the driver being late or rude or whatever, and I don't recall any of the vans being vandalized or anything of that nature. I mean, that was the way it was.
So just to go back a minute, now, in order for her customers to, all they had to do was call the number.
That's it.
Make a reservation.
That's it.
Could it be the same? Could it be a same day reservation? Could they call at 9 o'clock in the morning for a 12 o'clock doctor's appointment?
All based on availability.
Okay.
If there's a driver there or coming back or whatever, yes. In other words, somebody would call and say, I have an appointment with a doctor at a certain day, at a certain time, at a certain place. You go down on her book. And like I said, you know, the sad thing about all this, to be honest with you, is that if I had known what I know now and had been as diligent as I have become, I would have kept all those books. I would have done all those things because I would have been able to answer some of those questions. But that was not important back then. Uh-huh. See, Quincy was not the kind of person that would tell you what you're doing or go back and say, this is what I've done. All she would do is do it. And once it's done, that was what it was all about. And so I don't have a lot of the paperwork, but what I do have, and that's why I enjoy this, because, you know, some people can tell you a story, and not very many know the story to the extent that we do, my wife and I, but, I, you know, we lived it. And we're telling you the way it was and what happened. Now, like I said, if I could go back, I would keep all the paperwork, I would document things, I'd have pictures, I'd do whatever, but I don't have that. What I do have is, you know, the fact that the center is named the way that it is, and that's the reason for it, and that's what I saw. I mean, it was something to me to have a person who I know never ran a service like that before, that did it and did flawlessly, that had respect to the community to the point that they treated like it was whatever. And the amount of money, like I said, I never worried about it because you never needed money. We never had to worry about whether or not we were going to have enough fans or enough drivers or enough gas or whatever. And like I said, it was super. The proof in the pudding to me is that when it's all said and done, the city came in and said, in essence, look, this is too valuable. We can't afford to keep it on the way that it is, but we got to take it over and do it. That's pretty much the way it went.
When the city took it over, people then had to start paying, right? It then became a system where there was a route and the bus stops and that kind of thing. Is that correct?
Well, you know, I'm not so sure that people who use SunTran really pay for it.
Oh, okay.
As a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting because one of my partners is Jonathan Rothschild, who was the mayor.
Okay.
And Jonathan walked over here and he was telling, actually he's joking, he has a good sense of humor, but he was suggesting to his secretary that we're one of the reasons that the city now has a problem with the Teamsters because they had to hire the drivers and they're union members now and doing whatever, but I'm sure, you know, whatever, but I think that, you know, they had to bring another drivers to do it, but my thinking is that these are the drivers that pick up people when handicapped folks, when they have to go wherever. They don't, I'm not talking about the big bus system.
Sure,
there's another system of Amtrak. And they have separate units. And I think they're doing some of the same things. But the bottom line is that it's a citywide deal, but that's kind of the genesis of it was the Lyft program. And that's why, go ahead.
Let's talk a little bit about the center with the time that we have left. Tell me what kinds of tell our listeners where exactly it's located. Give us the address in Tucson and tell us what programs they have there. And do they have programs for seniors? Do they have programs for teens and youth? Tell us about the programs they have at the center.
Well, I'm going to have to ask you to talk to a few people that are down there now for the reason that I'm not completely up on all the things that they do, because you probably know that at first they built the library.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then they built, you know, a center and other things, and they do a lot of things on there, and I don't know all the things that they do. When they built the library, like I said, we had a dedication, and one of the things that I will tell you about is the fact that they used to have programs in Black history and recognizing contributions of people in the neighborhood, of course, Quincy being one of them, but there's a statue on there, the links put on the program because two women that did. And it's displayed, it's Margaret Campbell and, of course, Quincy, the two ladies that I've told you about. And my son did the sculpture, by the way, and that's why I know about it.
Wonderful.
He dedicated it, and it's on display down there. It's not very large, but and I do know that he, at some point in time, went down and gave a lecture on his research on Margaret Campbell and Quincy Douglas, his grandmother. And, of course, Quinn's in town now. He's an artist, and, you know, he... makes movies and all kinds of things like that. And so, but that's maybe somebody you want to talk to eventually, but his name is Quinn Davis.
But
they have programs like that down. But what happened in essence was that, you know, things took off because we not only have the library, there's a community center, there's a pool, there are a lot of different things down there. And my understanding is a full service center.
When I did my research on it, I did find that they do have programs, in fact, for seniors, for people over 50, which is wonderful. And they also have programs for youth and teens.
Yeah.
And exercise. It looks like they've got an exercise facility there. So it looks like it's a full service center.
It is. And the only reason I hesitate to do whatever is that I'm not sure I can do it justice. And I think what I would prefer you do is maybe have somebody come over and actually explain all the program, because I don't know. Here's what I will think is kind of interesting, just to show you how low-key Quincy was. And of course, her daughter is a pretty much the same thing. She's a pretty private person when you get right down to it. I mean, she did what she had to do because it's the right thing to do, not because she wanted publicity for it. But when they decided to do the mural down there, for example, they hired an artist and they were going to paint the, you know, whatever they painted, which is down there now. And of course, you see the list down there to explain what that's all about.
Right.
But they were trying to figure out what their favorite color was, and they hired an artist, and they're getting ready to go, and they're trying to figure out, well, what was her favorite color? I mean, what do we know about the lady? And the bottom line was, they talked to the mayor, Jonathan Rothschild, and said, well, if you want to know all those questions, you know, her daughter lives here, her son-in-law lives here. And so they put me in touch with the artist, and we told her what her favorite color was and a few things about it. But that's kind of the way it goes. I think the bottom line is this. Like I said, if I had to do it all over again, I would memorialize what we're talking about in writing to the point that people could read it. I think what we've been satisfied with through the years is that I think you can tell that, you know, my wife and I are pretty much the same way. When something comes along, you see a need, you work to address it. And you don't worry about whether who's going to get credit for it or what's going to happen. As long as people understand and appreciate what's happening, that's kind of a plus. And so, like I said, my wife has lived here all her life. A lot of people don't even know that Quincy Douglas was her mother, but by the same token, she let everybody know. And we always participated in programs. And of course, we know a lot of people who were born and raised in South Park, a lot of friends, and we go through. But by the same token, it's one of those things where, I don't have a lot of the material to more or less explain or have people come in and understand all the things that I've said. And that's why I'm happy to be able to do this interview, because, like I said to you before, I didn't read it. I lived it. And I'm telling you the way it was. And my guess is that, if anything, it's an understatement, but she was quite a lady.
I'm very grateful to you for sitting with us. Yeah. I have one other question. Part of the Black History series is going to include the Buffalo Soldiers.
Yeah.
And I understand that they're going to, I don't know if they're negotiating or for a space at the Quincy Douglas Center to have a monument. Did I get that right?
Yeah, they have something there now, but they hope to expand on it. But, you know, John Covington and the others can tell you about that. I mean, you know, I don't belong to the Buffalo Soldier Organization, but I will tell you, since you mentioned that I'll brag and say that I have one of the most extensive Buffalo Soldier collections of anybody in the city of Tucson. And I did that because I collect stuff like that. And I started collecting art and pictures. And of course, I know Bob Vann, and he'd done some extensive work on the Buffalo Soldier. And he made a couple of statues called the Old Trooper. I really negotiated, tried to get his first one. He wouldn't give me his first one, but I got his second one.
I had the privilege of meeting Bob at his home, he and his wife, Pat, at their home. And I'm telling you, my mouth dropped when I saw the magnificent work that he's done. I mean, just really, really beautiful work.
Yeah.
And Richard, I can't thank you enough for joining me at Boom Goddess Radio today to tell the story of this remarkable mother-in-law, Quincy Douglas.
Can I do one other thing before you leave?
Sure, quickly.
You know, you asked me about having my wife participate in this, and my wife and I have a pact. We've been married for over 50 years, and we get along pretty well, okay? And I said to her, you know, you have a choice of coming down and talking. And she reminded me that I can't get a word in edgewise at home, so I get a chance to do all the public speaking. So that's why you got me instead of her.
That's wonderful. And please tell her I appreciate her allowing you to sit with us and telling her mom's story.
Good enough.
Thanks very much again.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Right.